hopefully that works.
It says offline, starting.
Stream health.
Okay, wait, I think something's happening. I see a stream there.
Don't cross them.
Okay, things seem to be happening. Live now.
Ah, you're live!
Yay!
Yay! Oh my goodness. Okay, wait a second. Now I have to do some juggling of stream keys. So you, this is a great time for me to type in stream things, embeds, and you to introduce yourself. Because this is the whole MVC team.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah.
That was half-hearted.
Yeah, you're gonna be typing in. That sounds like fun, John.
Yes.
We could all just wait for you, or watch you awkwardly. Would that help?
That sounds fun.
Where are the MVC team? These are all the devs, and I'm the lonely PM. And we'll just go around. Let's just introduce who we are. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Ajay. I work on the MVC team. I mainly work on Razor and Razor tooling and all things related to it. That's about it.
I'm a dev on MVC / Razor as well.
What's
and,
your name?
Sorry, yeah, I'm Taylor.
That would probably be more.
I'm just
Taylor.
Call him Dev.
Yeah, just call me Dev. I think it totally works out. It's fine. So I'm Taylor, and so I work on Razor, all sorts of things, tooling and runtime and the whole Razor stack.
Okay. Hi, I'm Pranav. I'm on the MVC team. I've been working so hard trying to get the preview one out. I broke my wrist.
Sacrificing the body.
Hello, I'm Ardak. I'm messing up with GitHub mainly. Messing up your issues randomly.
Giving timely responses.
Yeah.
Issues every day.
I'm Ryan. I do a lot of work on our build backend and also localization and lately templating.
And I am Dan Roth. I am PM on the MVC team, and I work on all things MVC related and Blazor and Ace Makor.
I'm Other Ryan. I work on everything.
Lean in, so they can see.
Yeah.
There he is.
Great. Okay, so I have just a few community links for this week, so I'm going to share my screen, and I believe you have to do something there. You have to click on a button that says John.
Click the John button. He's got his own special button.
It's very exciting. Do you see my screen?
I see it. I see a blog.
Hooray! Okay, so just a few here. So this one is, Hisham is sharing one. This is partial action result helper in Razor pages and showing how to clean up things like unobtrusive AJAX using return partial. So this is cool. Short little reminder of something there.
And I think we addressed that issue in 2.2.
PR for it.
Yeah, so he actually sent us the PR for fixing that. So
oh,
we know
okay.
Hisham super well. He gives us lots of feedback and sends us PRs all the time.
He does. That's cool. Awesome. Okay, so this one looked pretty neat. This is on tiered compilation, and it's a preview for .NET Core 2.1. So this is talking about kind of giving you the benefits of both faster application startup time and faster steady state performance. So using a tiered, so this is basically, is this like a two-phase? You're welcome to jump in and say smarter things.
Yep. So this is a two-phase. It's a two-phase JIT for .NET. So at startup time, it will compile everything with minimal optimizations, and then once a function is called a certain number of times, it'll be recompiled harder the second time for more performance.
So awesome.
They're using this both to make startup time faster, as mentioned, and also to do optimizations that they don't normally haven't done in the past because they're worried about the impact on startup.
Yep.
Now this is in 2.1. Like 2.1 is shipped. So this mm-hmm. is, even though it says it's preview, like it's just an opt-in feature, right? Like you have to like flip a bit someplace and then you're
right
to
yes. So that's just down here. Now see I'm guessing eventually this will become the default at some point, right?
I think that would be the hope.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, so this is how to turn it on, and these bars illustrate how things get better when you do that. A few Blazor things. So Ankit typing, or Ankit has a post here on server-side Blazor. So this is understanding kind of the how it's working on the server, showing the signal arc communication and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We'll talk a little more about that today.
Cool. Exciting. Syed, here's a post on making a shopping cart with Blazor. So this is tying some things together. I like this because a lot of the kind of Blazor things that I've looked at so far have been pretty much, you know, like just looking at a front end. This is tying some things together with a web API backend and EF. So this is pretty cool here.
Yeah.
And this includes all this, you know, the EF stuff, saving your cart and all that kind of stuff. All right, David Pine did an interview with Steve Sanderson. So this is a question and answer. What is it? What's going on? What do you, some interesting, kind of viewpoints on it. So
I've been debating if I should get a Blazor that looks like that at the top. Like,
I'm kind of disappointed you haven't.
Sort of velvety,
yeah.
You know.
Eddie,
you could
explain
that.
Yeah. You know what's? But also, I should have brought this up. But the Channel 9 Studios, you know, they have a fabulous wardrobe department, and they have hundreds of these purple Blazors in a closet. Just
they already have them.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's too bad.
Last one I've got for you. Yet one more Blazor thing. This one's kind of neat. This is using Azure storage to host the site and Azure Functions to do some like static site updates. So what's cool here? These are all new kind of things, all being kind of cooked together. Azure storage has just recently gotten the ability, I think it was announced at Build, to host static sites. So this is, you know, because it's just static files, this is actually now does the stuff for headers and everything to host. Host web apps, static web apps. And then here, Gunnar's showing how to use functions, and he's doing updates, manipulating things, and then pushing that out to storage, and setting this up with storage and everything, and hosting the site.
That is awesome.
Very cool.
That is awesome, and I am done with my sharing, because I want to listen to you people.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Prepared several demos.
So we have like 90 different laptops lined up there with a bunch of demos.
And what about starting from Ajay?
Yeah.
He has some cool stuff to show.
Sure.
What's your number, Ajay?
I don't know.
Your number two. We'll move you to number two. Should we sort of give like a high level thing, John, about like what the MVC team's been working on and doing? And that might give some context for some of the demos that we're going to be showing.
Sounds good.
So in the MVC team obviously owns MVC. So that means all the MVC functionality in ASP.NET Core. That includes Razor Pages, which is just built on top of MVC. A lot of the team works heavily devoted to Razor and the Razor syntax, the language, and also the tooling around Razor. Like a lot of what you see in Visual Studio in terms of the Razor editor is actually built on infrastructure that's provided by this team. A lot of the services and building web APIs, those types of scenarios is also handled by MVC in ASP.NET Core, and so this team also handles a lot of that functionality as well. So if you're building like web APIs and using formatters, all that is actually also done by this team. Most recently, like what the team's been focused on is, we just shipped 2.1, so we're working on the next release, which is 2.2. There's a roadmap that's already been published, and so people are busy working on 2.2 features, and I think we have some early glimpses at some of those things. But the big focus in the 2.2 wave is around services and being cloud enabled, those types of things, working well as a microservice-based framework. A lot of the features are sort of in that vein. And then our Razor tooling investment also just continues to get better. So those are roughly the context for the set of features that we'll be showing. And then longer lead, you know, we're looking ahead to the .NET Core 3.0 timeframe. So that's, there's been a bunch of stuff that's been talked about on the .NET Core side about things that we're doing in 3.0 around supporting WPF applications and WinForms applications on top of .NET Core. But at the same time, that doesn't mean we're not going to still do like a bunch of web and services related features in ASP.NET Core. So there's some things also that we're looking to do in that time frame as well. So
that's roughly the stuff that we're focused on right now. And Ajay, you work on like you work on Razor, right?
Yeah,
so Razor tooling, those types of things. And so what are you going to show? Like what's the what's
so
the
recently
newness?
We've started working on some work on Razor refactoring, which is find all references is part of it in Visual Studio. So we, as everyone knows, find all references doesn't work with CSS HTML files unless they're open in the editor. So we're trying to fix all that and maybe have other refactoring in there as well, like renames and all that.
So find all references, refactoring, getting those to work in CSH HTML files just like they would in like a normal C# file. Okay, so let me switch it over to your machine, which I think is this one.
Yeah.
And if you could amp up the zoom a bit on that as well so people can see that.
How do you do that? I'm a zoom.
presumably you don't need the Solution Explorer that much, but when you open a file, you just like use the little zoomer in the bottom left-hand corner will work.
Whoa,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a bit too much.
You can see that, yeah.
Okay, anyway, so I have an app to shoot. What's up?
What? Yeah, so now zoom in the bottom left to like 150 or 200 or something.
For us old people.
Okay.
Is that good, John? Does
that
good?
Well, I have a screen leg, so I'm going to assume yes.
Living in the past.
So I have a normal MVC app here. I have a static property, and obviously it says it's zero references, and I'm going to shift F12 on it, and it doesn't find anything. But I have a reference to it right here. So
Darn. How
do we fix it?
I'm sure you've experienced this before if you've renamed.
Yep.
So you've renamed a property in a model, or you've moved something around your application, and now your views don't compile.
Yeah. And the reason this happens is that Roslyn, as such, doesn't know about CSS HTML files unless they're open in the editor, and there's like a background document generated for it. And now it's going to say, OK, oh, there's something there. I know about it. So if I now shift F12 on it, it's going to be like, yeah, I found something. But then you see the line numbers are all wrong because it thinks, OK, this is from the background document, not really from the CSS HTML. So
that's the world as it is today.
As it is today.
Things as they currently are.
Yeah. So what I have here is custom Razor with custom Roslyn. So to make this happen, we need to change some stuff in Roslyn, and that needs to support it and all that. So I already, to save some time.
It's a quick change. Quick change. It says, just should be ready any day.
Yeah, exactly. It's already done. So this is a super hacky prototype, by the way, and it's going to be a super quick demo too. It's only find all references. So to save time, I've already debugged into Razor, and it has created, it has spun up a new Visual Studio with that bits installed. So I have the same app open here, and if I go to Home Controller now, and wait for a little bit because
zoom again for us. It lost the zoom.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. This is a different one. Go. Wow, it's not doing anything.
Try again.
What?
Oh, it's not like it's just
being
non-responsive.
Yeah, I think it just doesn't want to do that. Wow, really?
You broke zoom.
Okay, I'm just going to use magnifier for now. Can we make this like 150? Oh my god, it's either 100 or 200. Never mind.
Right, new trick.
Okay.
Okay, get out of the magnifier.
Oh, this
okay.
is good.
It's fine.
This is good.
Perfect.
This is
perfect.
Let the engineers do the technical stuff.
Right. Now, I have the same thing open, but it says, hey, I now have two references. I have referenced it in two different things, and see that they're not open in the editor right now.
One of them was CSH HTML files. They weren't just C# files.
Yeah.
So
plus, now if you do a shift F12 on this, you go down, you see it, and if you see the line numbers, they're all correct. So if you double click on them, you get to the exact place where it is.
Ooh,
yeah. Reference.
Yay. I think that's nice. That's
so cool. The other thing that we want to do is that we want to do renames. So if you click on rename, you can see that it now knows there are four references in four files. But is it going to let me rename?
Bar.
So yeah, that's where we're at. It is all super experimental, super hacky right now. And yeah, soon we'll have it out to you. some point in the future.
That initial work on final references
is
going
to
come.
Yeah.
Is something we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be clear, when I invited... I did ask for some demo fails. Basically, you're having some demo fails, so you're showing boring stuff.
You will definitely
show that as real. So I'm going to still show you my trick. Like in the quick bar in the upper right,
yeah,
in the quick bar of Visual Studio, you see that thing, like type just the word font.
Right up next, yeah.
Everybody knows this thing.
Font.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't know.
But anyway, my demo is done, so I don't need to know.
Just so you know, that's the
okay.
quickest way to change your font size, so it always applies. You don't
next
have to keep
time.
Resuming.
Okay. Next
that was
time.
Great, Ajay. Cool. Okay, so back to the screen. All right, who do we got next?
Sure.
Taylor is up next. Taylor also works on
Razor
yep. tooling.
So we've been doing a lot of stuff to make sure the next wave of Razor is awesome. And one thing we have been asked a lot for is, well, what about VS Code Razor? So I'm not promising anything. Right now, we're investigating what that might mean. You can go ahead and
switch it over. Yeah.
So, we have been looking at what that means for VS Code Razor. There's a lot there. It's a totally different environment than Visual Studio. One of the things that makes final references and refactoring really difficult, which is what Ajay was just showing, is that for every Razor file, we have a C# file that corresponds to that, and every single C# location in your Razor file that has any sort of coloring or any sort of completion. Well, really, that's kind of going back into this other background file and running stuff on that background C# file. Which means if we want to find all of the references in the entire project, we need to parse every single file. All these problems are just exacerbated in VS Code because it's a totally different environment. But I have some very hacky things working. It is super prototype-y, and you're most definitely going to see a demo fail at some point today. So again, this is just investigating, not promising anything, just seeing what it would mean if we had something like VS Code Razor. So I've actually booted up an extension environment for VS Code right now. I have some of my code running. I've written a little Razor language server. And one of the things you can see right now is I get some nice little HTML autocomplete. So it's a little contextual as well. So if I end up writing, like, say, a JavaScript tag, not only did I get the script tag, but I also have JavaScript IntelliSense. So we have understanding of where we are in a Razor file, and my JavaScript, and my CSS, and my HTML. And then if I go a little further, well, if I start adding Razor blocks and I invoke some IntelliSense stuff, this is actually from C#. Now, it's not very contextual. It's not what you'd typically see in a Razor file for all the other reasons I just said about VS Code being very different. But it is actually hitting the C# language server and saying, hey, what's the completion at this point? Which is pretty cool.
It at least knows that block is C# and not a chunk of it.
Exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah. I actually have one. Output window here. I'm not gonna be able to find this. Anyways, yeah, I have a little thing so every single time you do any sort of action, it actually asks our background Razor language server and says, hey, what language am I in? And then it does the appropriate thing. So then we can go one step further and say, okay, well, what if I wanted to make this say like a page? Well, we have directive
IntelliSense.
So we have all the various directives that are here. And this is all because in the background, we are parsing your Razor file. We understand your project to some extent using the correct Razor language version, and you're providing all the directives and all that goodness. Now, I want to touch a little bit on what I was saying before, as there's a background C# document. So we're doing kind of the same thing here in VS Code, where there's a background C# document and then what you see. But this is super hacky right now, and I want you to imagine if I were to rename this all to .cs, that's equivalently what's happening right now. So what I can do is if I go here and I paste this entire program.cs into my Razor file, well, it thinks all this is markup right now because I have no curly brace, but really I'm hacking things. It's duplicated this in my background C# file, so I can make a nice little comment here. And I'm saying, well, you know what? In C#, this is gonna be read as just a comment, but to hack my tooling, this is actually C#. So if I go back here and I get no suggestions, there's one demo fail there. Oh, there we go. Okay, so we get some more contextual-based C# completion working here. So again, total hacky. We're seeing what it means. It's kind of cool to kind of interoperate with all these various language servers, and I have a whole bunch of designs. Like, I'm starting to write up a little thing as what I think a design might look like for this. if we're to even accomplish it, or if we to even have a chance at doing it. So kind of have the idea of you have a Razor extension, which has a Razor document, and you have, like I was saying, a background C# document, background HTML one, and then based off of what happens in the document, you kind of dispatch to one of these two guys. We have multiple language servers we're talking to. There's a lot here.
So Razor's pretty involved, right? But you have like essentially like three, four languages. You throw in like CSS, all being interleaved in a single file, and trying to get all the right IntelliSense.
Yeah, it's
all the right places.
It's one of those things that there's a lot of little nuances that people don't understand. So when we were first going into .NET Core Razor and 2.0 work, we're like, oh, what happens if we were to like rename the file? Like, what would that even mean? Like, if it was not .cshtml but .foo, right? Well, we realized that a lot of parts of our stack actually depend on things being called .cshtml, because the idea of another language being embedded inside of a Razor file is a really special case-like thing.
Yeah.
So it's really complicated, but we're trying to see if with an approach like this, maybe we can make it not as complicated. And if that means getting VS Code Razor, great. If it doesn't, well, it's okay too. But we're seeing what it means.
So this is like the initial groundwork so that like at some point, there could be a Visual Studio Code extension that adds like Razor, full Razor editing support.
Yeah, that's our goal. And I think full might be a little bold there. it's kind of the same where like if
rich,
you rich, okay, rich, there we go.
Productive.
How about this? The C# you see in VS Code should work the same way the C# you see in a Razor in VS Code.
That's all. Does anyone, John? Is anyone interested in this? Like, is there? Does anyone on the stream like want Razor editing for VS Code? Let's just ask him.
Well, David says, "Tell Taylor I'm looking at strong naming tonight."
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so I have this whole little. What he's referring to is John. He was actually pretty awesome, and I'm using some of his language server bits to make this Razor language server piece here work. But they're not currently strong names, so I'm kind of jumping through a few hoops to make it work. But again, we're just investigating, so it's okay.
Is that David Driscoll? Which guy are we talking about? That David. Yeah, we should talk.
Yo, reach out to us.
We gotta chat some more.
David is awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me see. Another question. Okay, Shane says, I get asked this at every conference, but I'm not sure. I guess just when the support is coming. Other people saying they'd love to see Razor support in VS Code.
We're looking into it. There's no timeline because it's just an investigative thing right now. It maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. We're just seeing what that means.
I have a question. Like, and first of all, I love this that you're showing a diagram here because it is cool to see the features. But I'm interested too. Like, you can show us your backend code. Like, here's how you implemented something or any of that kind of stuff. I think that's kind of fascinating too.
Sure, I can do something like that.
Uh-oh, the dirty truth.
I can do something like that.
So everyone, Taylor considers himself a TypeScript expert. If you have any feedback from him, he'd be anxious to hear it.
Okay, so I have to give some context here. My TypeScript knowledge is, I wrote Shooter way back in the day for SignalR, right? That was on 0.4. TypeScript, and that is where my knowledge stopped, and I regained it doing this and our last hackathon thing, which I think you saw in the last thing. So no judgment, super hacky.
Well, I think you've been endorsed for it on LinkedIn also.
Do I? Oh, no. Oh, I'm gonna get everything fact checked now. Okay, so you know what I'll do? I'll show the completion provider. So this is when you actually try and vote any sort of completion in my CCHTML file, what actually happens. So this is a VS Code abstraction that they provide, this VS Code.completion item provider, and you basically implement this method, provide completion items. So the first thing we do is we say, okay, well, service client, go ahead and do a language query based on this position and the document. So what that does is it goes and asks our Razor language server, am I C#? Am I HTML? What the heck am I? And then based off of that, if we're C#, then we go and we find our projected C# document, aka the virtual C# document mentioned in this diagram, this one. And then we say, well, let's capture that and let's re-execute the same exact command we did on that background document. At which point we consume the results. So the background document did the completion. It said, here's what I think the completions are. And we represent those as our own. So we grab the completion list and say, nah, those completions actually belong to us. And we show them as if they were in Razor. So that's just one piece of it. There's a whole bunch more here to actually get things going, but that's kind of a basic flow for a user typing and then something happening and trying to show the correct IntelliSense in Razor.
And I missed it if you said earlier, am I as a developer, let's say I'm building my own extension or whatever, is that something where I could get access to that virtual document as well?
So I am building the virtual document actually. It's not something that is commonly done in VS Code extensions. The idea of having a document, so virtual document, really, all it really is just a document that doesn't exist on disk. It has content to it, it has a language to it, but it's not really there. So there's a few little private hacks I'm doing to make that possible to work with all the other various extensions to see what it would mean. Because of course we don't want to totally change the world, we kind of want to work within the bounds of what we're given.
Sure.
So yeah, it's a different concept.
The answer is no.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
That was awesome. Thanks. Cool. Okay. We got Pranav next. Pranav, what are you gonna show us? What's
Yeah, so we shipped this in preview one, which is going out soon, today, tomorrow,
supposed
sometime.
To be today, we'll see.
Yeah.
Preview one of
2.2.
ASP.NET Core 2.2 should be previewing
soon.
Yeah.
Part of it was we wanted to like focus on making like better swagger generation on the client, and so like you know to get better swagger generation for the like or basically do swagger references between projects and so on and so forth. And one of the aspects was like, well, we wanted to you to have produce better swagger to start with. So what I have here, do you want to switch to my screen?
Let's go to one. The Pranav one. That's a black screen.
Oh, right, because there you go. And I'm gonna, should I just like extend it instead? Or duplicate
fix
it?
Fix your
instead?
Zoom.
Yeah, I will do that.
This is how you know that these are all real working developers. Everybody has to be told to fix their Zoom level for the presentation.
Yeah.
You're getting the real deal today on a community stand-up.
No, it doesn't do anything between the two. Anyway, so yeah, like
50 on that.
Right. So we have, you know, basically like a regular old, you know, API controller that you have into one. So for Tutu, we also like scrubbed up some of the scaffolded code. So like, you know, if you look at it, like it does like action result of T now.
We might want to actually remind people because I don't like 2.2.1 is actually still pretty new, but that API controller attribute is actually applying a whole bunch of web API specific conventions to this controller.
Right.
Like things like assuming that a complex type is from the body.
Yeah. So
running checking if the model state is valid instead of you having to do that. That's all enabled by that attribute.
Right. So for instance, like if you were in how do I make this like not scroll around?
So,
for instance, if this was a duo application, like you would have like a from body here and so on and so forth.
A bunch of attributes on those parameters to say that this is from the query string, this is from the body, whereas here it's actually just inferred by convention.
Right. So we're taking this like another step. So the idea was that, you know, we decided like, hey, if you're, like we looked at a bunch of like Swagger outputs from like GitHub and Azure and so on and so forth, and we sort of decided that like, you know, they typically follow a sort of pattern, or you know, and you could sort of extract them as like, hey, we could reason about them in terms of some conventions. So what I'm gonna do is,
like one of the reasons why we added these conventions is because it makes the actions much more descriptive, like in terms of what they do. Like,
right.
If you didn't actually put a like a from query attribute on one, like that int ID parameter, then well, it could come from the query string, it could come from
right.
So, who knows from where? Whereas with the new conventions, it's much more descriptive about where they actually come from, which helps with Swagger doc generation.
Yes. Let's go in. So for one, like the thing that we added was like a analyzer. I'm gonna turn it back on here. Still using like bits from my local machine, but that's fine. All I did was basically add a package reference. So if you now look at the analyzer, there's like a new package that says API analysis. And then the moment it turned on, like you know, it's now complaining about a bunch of things. So I'm going to
zoom
back
in.
Yeah.
So that package you added, that's a new 2.2 package, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so new analyzer package that will help you know about the new conventions, because there's more conventions now.
Right. And it's basically just telling you like, hey, you know, like you're returning something that you haven't documented. So like by default, like MEC assumes that it gives you a 200 or a 201 if you haven't put in a pre-usage response type. So basically it says like, hey, you're probably returning like a 200 from here, right? But then, you know, there's something here that says like you returned unauthorized and you haven't documented it, so your swagger isn't gonna look great. So you should probably document it. And so one of the things we could
do. Does it do a fix up? Like it?
Yeah.
Oh.
So one of the things that it does is like you can add this and like now you say like, hey, you return a 200, you return a 201, 401, and then it produces default response type. This is something Swagger supports. It says that you could be returning anything and here's the shape of the data that is coming out of it. Like, you know.
So that will then show up in my like my OpenAPI spec.
Yeah, and you can
you'll know exactly which status codes could be returned from this resource, and yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we can go have a look at that. So I'm using nswag here.
Nswag.
Yeah, to produce my swagger output. We can look at the, what was my action? This guy? It was the put, no, sorry, it was the get. Right, so no, you get the 401,
yeah,
the 401.
Nice.
Right. And this is kind of nice, but the thing is, like, you know, if you start off with this, like, you know, you start adding the package, like, you now have, like, a million, like, warnings that say, like, let's go look at my output window. And it's like, hey, you know, and this is just one controller, and there's, like, you know, a dozen of them already, or at least half a dozen of them already. So what we have as part of the thing is, like, we basically, like, now have a notion of a convention type. That's not what I wanted to do. So the idea is that basically you can associate an assembly with like an API assembly with a set of conventions that say like, oh, all my get actions are going to look like this. Like they will return a 400, a 404, and a 200. All my post actions will do these sort of things. And if you go back here, you notice like all of the warnings went away. I mean, I'm going to zoom it again, and you know, apart from like this strange warning. And if you go back and turn the, go look at the Swagger output again. So let's look at the
post.
Now
all your actions are nicely
descriptive. Yeah, so if you look at the post, it says like, hey, this returns a 200 and a 400 and a default. Like the delete would say something like it returns a 404 and a 400. There's like a bit of like documentation missing here, and like we're planning on probably using like problem details like in preview 2 to say like, you know, this is the shape of like the default response in the case like there's an error response. And so the idea is that like, you know, this is just a regular one.
But what that convention type, like what was that thing? Like what did I do? Like,
right. So like this is basically just a like a vanilla C sharp thing. Here, no, it's navigating, right? And it's not very good at like the zoom thingamajig.
So these are a bunch of static methods that look like they're tied to the, like the HP method. Is that?
Yeah. So let's go look at the get one, like because you know, that's pretty common. So yeah, it basically, you know, is a way to sort of say like apply use some sort of rules to figure out what methods match what. Like what this method matches in your controller action, and then like apply these sort of response types to it. So here, what it's saying is that like, you know, any method that starts with a get, so like the name match, like
prefix. Okay,
it's a prefix,
yeah.
And it has, I guess, like one parameter that. Oh my god, that's not. if it matches a parameter that ends in like the suffix ID of any type, like, you know, apply a 200 and a 404 to it. And the thing is like you can, like if you're, you know, we base these conventions based on what we produce with our scaffolding output. So like, you know, we said like our scaffolding does this, so we are like tailoring like these conventions based on that. But like if you have like a different set of rules, so for example, like you don't return a 400 for a bad request, you return a 412.
422.
Of 422. you know, you can do that. Like, you could basically, like, you know, take this type, there's going to be a doc that says, like, how do you author one of these things? And then, like, you know, you say, like, hey, use these sort of conventions from an app And so instead of decorating all your action methods with like, you know, a set of like five or six producer response type, like you would have one set of thing.
So and this, can, sorry, go ahead.
And you can still use your producer response type for like things that are unconventional. So like, let's say you have a search method, like this one doesn't like do search, and you know, or you have a get method that returns a 201 and you know, instead of returning a 200, like you can still use producer response type on it, it'll get used instead of it.
Makes sense.
So yeah. This really means that as soon as we match this convention, apply this convention to the API controller, we could remove the additional attributes we've added and we would get the same.
Yeah, so
generated.
Yep. So let's say, so in fact, like this one is actually wonky because like the get method actually returns an unauthorized. I think it's part of like a demo, so it'll actually complain eventually that fun.
Yay, demo fail.
Yay.
You are welcome.
Or succeeding.
Yeah, there you go.
So the other way that this helps you is that one, it saves you typing if you have a set of conventions for, you know, what sort of status codes and responses you want to use. The other way that it helps you is, well, if you have a set of conventions about what status codes you're using and how you're using them, it helps you know if you've made a mistake or know if you've got places in your API where you deviate. And these work with the analyzer works correctly with the attributes as well, right?
Yeah.
So if you're using the attributes today for this, the analyzer, and you like that, because you might like that, you know, some people have been happily using Swagger with MVC for a long time, this will tell you when you've done something that you didn't document.
Right.
Okay. So there's a question from Patrick on the chat. He says, why is this convention configured through basically static stuff instead of using more flexible options approach, which would allow people to use different conventions for different parts?
So we wanted the whole experience to sort of, like, we wanted to use analyzers and code fixes to like drive some of the experiences around this. So like if you notice like this thing where it said like, hey, I return an unauthorized and it, you know, highlighted it and so on. Like the only way you can do that is by inspecting code in Roslyn. Like if you have options that are configured at runtime, like you can't actually run code in an analyzer. So.
But you can metaprogram it, right? Like there is support for that in the object model.
There is a support for it. But the thing is, it's like, the primary reason why we chose like a static way of like an attribute on an assembly is so that we can drive tooling experiences. But there is an object model that you can like basically say like, okay, I don't actually care about like the tooling as much.
So the answer is, if you want to do your own thing, you can do your own thing.
Yep.
You're giving up the analyzer. If you do that, that's your choice. If you want to do that, that's fine.
Yep.
Also, just to answer the other part of his question, probably, is you still can apply different conventions to these different controllers. So it's
right,
not
okay.
Limited, like you don't apply this throughout your application, it's just per controller, while you still can apply globally too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's probably worth mentioning that, like we kind of talked about the feature in isolation, but the intent is a sort of broader arc, right? Like that you have APIs that are following these conventions, which now have very descriptive open API specs, and then there's like a code gen piece that we want to build on top of this as well, right?
Like, yeah,
where
that's
you can
part of our preview 2 work, which is, I think we announced this as part of the 2.2.0
yeah.
announcement, which was we're going to make P2P, you know, Swagger client generation out of the box. And so you basically would have like a TypeScript project that's associated with your API project, and you could say like, hey, generate, like add a reference to my service reference to my API project and generate a TypeScript client or a C# client.
TypeScript generation, C# generation, and if I remember correctly, it's more like a provider model for that code generation, right? Like we mentioned NSWAG before, like the
right.
idea is that projects like NSWAG could plug into that code
right.
generation system and provide those
yeah.
those clients.
So if you're accustomed to like your favorite like client side, you know, client generator, like, you know, you don't have to like choose a thing. You can continue using them as long as like they sort of follow some sort of, you know, a specific pattern of how to build it.
Cool.
Cool.
All right. What else we got? Ryan.
Sure. Yeah.
You wanna show what you've been working on recently?
That's not the right one. I need HDMI.
There's
an HDMI
oh,
on
okay.
there. Like I can get all of them. Yeah.
Just there.
So I've been working on templating, getting our templates moved to newer versions of things. We moved to Angular 6, we moved to Bootstrap 4, and yeah, just kind of modernizing them a little bit. And I don't know why this isn't.
Which there. Number is that? That's number one.
There you go.
There we go.
Ooh.
So this is the MVC starter web template. You know, we peeled out a lot of the extra, you know, getting started information here and just gave you a link.
No more carousel. It's the end of an era.
The end of an era.
The billboard is gone. Oh. This is Bootstrap 4 based template.
Yep.
This is a Bootstrap. This is before 4.1. Whatever the latest is.
4.1.3.
Yeah.
You know, Dan, we could use that space to advertise Blazor.
That's right.
We did some quality of life fixes, like the cookie consent partial no longer overlays your menu. It goes down in a more sensible area. It's all responsive. We can use. Can show you. Zoom isn't great on that, but it. Eventually, we'll fold in into uh-huh. your fancy hamburger with the
mobile-friendly
collapsible
look.
Button. Yeah, and yeah, that's mostly that. We also have
so going for like a more minimalistic, cleaner look here as we went to Bootstrap 4. Yeah. Nice.
That's the idea. We also have Angular here on the other tab. Same general idea. Both of these still in progress, but. We still have some getting started information here, but otherwise it's very similar. We've got the hamburger button, which it keeps trying to scroll past to hide your menus when you get small, and yeah.
So that's the spa template. This one's Angular, and we updated to the latest Angular. So it's Angular 6.
Angular 6, yeah.
Angular 6 is now in the latest spa templates. That's cool.
Is there anything that's I don't know. What were some of the bigger changes in updating to 6?
Our spa templates don't do a whole heck of a lot. So from our perspective, there wasn't a huge change. It's more about, you know, starting with the latest stuff for the user than anything.
Okay. And then what about, is anything new or different with the front end build stuff that's going on? Like pulling in the Angular library and all that, how's that referenced?
Not yet. I think you're referring to like client library acquisition. Like today.
Sure, yeah.
Today the templates just sort of drop Bootstrap or Angular or whatever into the project and they're just there, and how you want to handle managing and restoring those packages is really a project for the user right now. VS did ship support for a package acquisition solution called Libman, so that's now available. We haven't integrated that into the templates yet, but that's something we're working with that team on pretty closely, so that you can have a simple way of acquiring the client-side libraries, making sure they end up in the right place in the www root folder when they need to actually be served up as static files, and having that done seamlessly without you having to having sort of a turnkey solution if you're not interested in installing the node-based toolchain, like the npm-based toolchain. But of course, if you do want that full build pipeline, you can still, of course, go and do that. You just go install Node and set up Webpack or whatever, and that works fine. But we wanted to give, we're looking at trying to give a way to manage your client-side libraries with not a lot of ceremony, just out of the box. That's something we hope to do soon. That's not in these templates yet, though, but it is something we're looking at.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks. So these are Bootstrap 4. Obviously, our current stuff is Bootstrap 3, and I'm guessing a lot of people still have Bootstrap 3 apps. So it's probably worth mentioning that we're not just going to leave you behind. Like, the plan is still to support, for example, scaffolding into Bootstrap 3-based applications and still have that work. Like being able to detect, like, oh, wait, this isn't a Bootstrap 4 app yet. Let's not scaffold in a bunch of Bootstrap 4-based content into your project. Like when you're setting up MVC views or Razor pages, we'll still be able to scaffold those things for you so that your existing applications, if you're not quite ready to move to Bootstrap 4 yet, you can still use the tooling, still be productive. So those are things we're planning to do as well.
Wow. How do we check for that? Is it just checking the library reference? Or jazz hands?
We look for it. Yeah, it'll be, I mean, we'll go hunting around for the Bootstrap files.
We read your mind.
Yeah.
Nice.
And of course, there'll always be the option, like you explicitly say, no, give me Bootstrap 4, or no, give me Bootstrap 3. That's what I want. It's not all magic.
Okay. You could check my search history for like Angular references.
Yeah, you know, we'll look them up. We're gonna look up on LinkedIn and see like, what kind of guy is this. Like, do some profile. Yeah, no. Okay, I have one last demo that I can show as well. Why don't we grab? I need this one. This is the one that works for
actually,
me.
While you're setting that up, so x86 Cowboy is asking about Aurelia support, and that is something that's not like in the box. But if somebody does want to use Aurelia, that's a library they can drop in, right? I mean, that's...
You can absolutely use whatever client-side library you want with ASP.NET Core. In terms of getting templates that have Aurelia wired up already, we had a template pack on NuGet with the Aurelia templates, which I believe you can still install and use. That's actually, for a lot of the client-side stuff, because it moves so fast, we're actually moving more in that direction, where instead of having things sort of in the box in VS where they have a lot of latency in terms of how fast we can update them to keep up with the latest versions of those frameworks, we're probably going to actually move to a more NuGet-based model so that they can update faster. Like, as soon as Angular 6 come out, we'd like to be able to give you guys Angular 6 templates or Angular 7 or Bootstrap 10 or whatever it is. Having it baked into the SDK, that just means that we can't update it quite as quickly as we'd like to. So it's probably going to be more of a .NET new-i, the corresponding template pack that you want, and then you can get whatever spot framework templates you'd like. So that's the thinking there.
Cool. And one other thing to prevent you from moving forward with the demo you're anxious to show is, so Martin asked if Libman is already integrated into MS Build for new projects. That would be awesome. No VS needed. I guess there are separate solutions people have built, global tools, I think, that do this sort of thing.
I believe, there's a CLI experience for Libman. I'm not sure. Maybe he's asking for some more MS Build direct integration that doesn't require any VS at all. I don't know. Like, that'd be really a better question for the Libman folks. I don't have as much visibility into that space. But
cool.
Yeah, let them know. Like, if we'd comment on their blog posts.
Or, what's the right place for that feedback?
I actually don't know where the Libman code is.
I mean, VS feedback is probably a good place to start.
That would work.
VS developer community site.
Yeah, I don't remember if is Libman's code on GitHub. I have to check on that.
It is.
If it is, then you just open an issue.
So it's GitHub ASP.NET Library Manager.
There you go. So just file an issue there and let them know what you want, and they'll take a look. Okay. So I was going to show a little bit of Blazor. I'm on 2. So we just shipped a Blazor update, what was it, like last week, I think, or maybe 2 weeks ago. And in Blazor 0.5, we shipped support. We did some explorations into out-of-process models for Blazor. If you haven't been following along with the Blazor experimental project, what it is an effort to try and bring .NET web development into the browser via WebAssembly. We basically have a WebAssembly-based .NET runtime that we can use to run normal .NET assemblies directly in the browser. So full stack development with .NET. But we have been interested, though, in these other cases where, like today, Blazor actually runs in the browser UI thread, effectively. Like, it's right there in that same process. But it was architected to support out-of-process models, where the Blazor component model and its rendering can actually be done someplace else, and then have the DOM updates and the UI interactions be handled over some out-of-process channel. Originally, this was done because we were thinking, well, it might be great to run Blazor in like a web worker instead of having it run directly on the browser UI thread. And then we took that model and like, well, this actually extends to other cases. We used it to do a prototype with Electron, where you run Blazor's component model in a .NET core process, but then handle all the DOM updates and UI interactions over an IPC channel with the Electron process. And so you can actually use Blazor with full .NET core under the covers in an Electron app. And then most recently, we thought, well, what if we took that channel and like stretched it over a network
And actually, you could run Blazor all the way on the server and handle all of the UI interactions over like a SignalR connection. So let me show you what I mean. Like this, I have two apps running here. This first one is a standard Blazor application. And if we go, you know, it does all the standard Blazor things, like you can click buttons and you can issue an HTTP request to the server and pull down some JSON data and render it on the screen. And if we look down in the network tab, you can see that the download size, you know, it's a little beefy. You know, 1.88 megabytes is what's being pulled down from the server, and that's because, well, we're literally pulling down a full .NET runtime. There's mono.wasm right there. That is the .NET runtime implemented in WebAssembly, and there's my application assembly and all of the dependencies that it requires, including like the BCL related libraries. So that's the nice thing about this model is it's all running on the client, and you can have full access to the browser. You can do offline scenarios, all that stuff. But here's another version of that app. This is a server-side version of Blazor, where the Blazor component model is actually being executed on the server, and all interactions are happening on the client. And so let me do one trick. I don't know how well this is going to show up over the streaming, but if I refresh the original Blazor app. You know, there's one, two, three, you know, a couple second delay while the download happens and the .NET runtime gets spun up. If we go to the server-side version of the app, first, I hope you notice that the download size has now dropped to under 100K, which is, that looks pretty good. And if you refresh the application, you know, it's boop, you know, it's just basically there. It refreshes really, really quickly. But it still has all the same functionality. Like I click a button, I can update my counter. There's no page refresh happening there. I can render dynamically the table of weather forecast data. So same functionality. And it's literally the same code, like the same component implementations that we had in the Blazor application. Like if we, you know, like look at your counter component. This is the Blazor app code for the counter component, and that looks like, you know, let me zoom a little bit more for folks. That looks like a normal component. Just got a field for managing the count, and then a on-click handler for incrementing the count. If we go to the server-side version of that same component, it will, I know, big surprise, looks the same. Like it's literally the same code. So same component model, just basically running in a different place. And so we shipped this in 0.5, and people, there's quite a bit of interest. I wish Javier's not here. We actually have a couple folks that aren't in the room. Where's Javier? This was Javier's idea. I told him I would say that. One of the devs actually made the suggestion that we could run Blazor this way, and I will admit that I was initially a little skeptical. Like, I was not sure that this was actually going to be a workable pattern.
Let's talk about that just for a second, because basically, like, okay, we had Razor pages already working on the server, shipping HTML down to the client, right? And yep. Then we're like, hey, now we've got Blazor, and we're running my C# code in the browser, amazing. And then now it looks like you're showing me we're moving that C# code back up to the server, but we already had that. What are you getting at?
Like, why would you want this? So, well, first of all, you're getting full UI composition with this model. Like, you have full components with state. Like, it's a stateful based programming model for actually building your apps. Like, if you ever, you know, one way to think about this is it's not quite a full comparison, but if you've ever built a tag helper and felt like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if I could just like implement this as a CSHTML file? Like Blazor kind of gives you, the Blazor component model kind of gives you that. You also get the full UI interactivity. Like, because we have that persistent SignalR connection where we're doing the DOM diffs and sending just the diffs down to the client and handling all the event UI interactions from the browser back up to the server, you get that spa-like feel where things, only the parts of the app that need to update without having to go full-on spa with like an existing spa JavaScript framework like React or Angular. So you still get to write C# code, you still get to use .NET, you get a composition model on the server for your UI, and it's, yeah, and I would also say this, that it's not like a movement back. It's in addition to.
It's transparent.
So, because the component model is actually completely the same, and the only thing we're doing is just running on a different runtime and handling all the interactions over a connection, the progress that we make on the component model applies to both. And that is completely the intent. Like, everything that we do now in Blazor, that will give you features on the client and also give you features on the server. The nice thing though about the server is that the runtime is a known quantity. Like it's .NET Core. It's already shipped. It's already done. Whereas mono.wasm and having a WebAssembly-based .NET runtime, that's still very much a work in progress. Like there's a lot of things we need to do there around perf and download size optimization, which will happen and is happening, but it may take a little longer. So the thing that we've been talking about internally is, well, maybe we could actually move fast with the server-side model, get that to people so they can use it today. And in our survey results, we've been asking people, like, do you want this? Like, would server-side Blazor be useful to you? And about half of the people are saying, yes, if you gave me that, that's what I would want to use. People still care deeply about the client-side model. Like 90% of people are like, I want the client-side model, but if you give me server-side, I'm interested in that as well. So that's what we're gonna do. We're planning to, in .NET Core 3.0, we're gonna go ahead and take this Blazor server-side model that I'm showing you here, and we're gonna integrate that deeply into ASP.NET Core. So that from like your Razor page or MVC view, you can take a Blazor component and use that within that file, within that view or page. You can define components within your ASP.NET Core project. If you want to define a whole page as a component, you know, you can do that. In fact, it's so generic and it's not really most people, because they associate Blazor with the client-side story. Since I'm just talking a lot, maybe I should switch back. The client-side story, we're actually thinking that, you know, this probably deserves a different name. Like, it's a sort of a different thing. So we're calling this this feature Razor Components. It's taking the Blazor component model and making it available to you on the server. And that's what we're planning to do now in the .NET Core 3.0 wave.
So, and then how you mentioned components, and we already had view component, right? How does this kind of fit in with the view components?
View components are so unfortunately named. So everyone who's tried to use a view component and tried to make it into like this reusable piece of UI actually probably relates completely to what I'm talking about with like wanting a true UI composition model. Like view components look like and sound like they do what you want them to do, and then you find out that they don't. Whereas I think a lot of the scenarios that people try to use view components for, they're gonna try out Razor components and find out, oh, that's actually what I really wanted. Like, I need a way to like have a component that brings along some JavaScript files that it uses under the covers or some other assets. Like Razor components enable that. I need a way to have like a prepackaged piece of UI that I can just drop as a NuGet package into an app and just use it. That's what Razor components gives you. And at the same time, while we work on the Razor components feature, we will continue to work on the Blazor client side effort. Like that's not going away. Like the two models are completely symmetrical. You can literally flip between them pretty much by just switching the JavaScript bootstrapping file that you use in the project. So as we make progress on the server, the client side will just also continue to get better, and the runtime will then mature in parallel.
Okay, Shane's asking like, what's in the server project? Can you show us like?
Yeah.
But how actually that works.
So the server project looks, oh, the down here. Like, so, okay, so.
You need to switch.
Oh, yeah, switch. So one thing you did notice that that is a little different with the server-side application is there's now two projects. Like there's the .app project, which has all the components and all the Blazor server-side stuff. But then there is also this server-side project, and that's just your ASP.NET Core app that's actually hosting the whole application. So the interesting things in here, if we look in startup, so we're setting up compression. So add server-side Blazor is setting up the server-side Blazor services, and then down at the bottom, use server-side Blazor. It's pointing at the startup class for the app project. And that's, so the adding the services is first of all unifying the service providers. So the same service provider that's used in the ASP.NET Core app, that's available to the Blazor application, so they can share services. And then down below, the use server-side Blazor, that's what's actually gonna set up the SignalR connection and get the server-side Blazor app up and running within the context of an ASP.NET Core app. And one of the things we want to do as part of integrating server-side Blazor into ASP.NET Core proper is like, and make it so that you can just have like one project. Like the main reasons why these are two projects right now is that the compilation model for Blazor is significantly different than what we have in Razor today. Like it, when we compile your components, we compile it into these, you know, statements that are have deep knowledge about the structure of the HTML. Whereas normal Razor files are basically treating the HTML as strings. We need to do a bunch of work to make it so that those two compilation models can be used within the same project, which may involve, I think someone mentioned like having a different file extension for those files. We may involve doing that work so that we can enable those scenarios.
It seems interesting to me to be able to have the flexibility where you can almost kind of toggle it on and off, like have the same app. Like, I can see a case where I would like to have them as keep it separate, even though I'm running on the server, to be able to say, like, hey, allow running some on the client and some on the, sometimes on the server and that kind of thing.
The part where that would really help is, like, at the level of individual components, right? We said we still care about the client-side model for Blazor. We're still developing the client-side model, still experimenting. Like, you write a component definition as a reusable library or reusable package, and you support both of those models. And you didn't have to do any work to get there. We brought you there.
Yeah,
right? That's really what this means.
Including things like even like JavaScript interop, where you have like a component that tries to call into a JavaScript library. That works in a server-side Blazor app. Like, we do all the work to handle pumping that JavaScript call down to the browser and getting the response back. That was all work that was done in the 0.5 Blazor release.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, so Shane's saying you could essentially have middleware add server-side Blazor and add server-side, or yeah, add server-side Blazor and use server-side Blazor.
Yep, now that's how you set it up on the ASMIC core project. And then the only other difference in the .app project is instead of the like blazor.webassembly.js JavaScript bootstrapping file, it's like blazor.server.js.
Cool.
And then you just need to make sure your code is structured in a way so that it now runs on the server. Like you, for example, you're probably not going to want to issue HTTP requests to yourself from that application anymore. You can just access a service that's in the DI container for like accessing your weather forecast data or things like that, because it's literally running on the server. So that's what we wanted to let you guys know. That's something that we are planning to move forward with. And the client-side stuff will also continue to make progress. It's just that one will continue to be experimental for a little while longer while we bake the runtime.
Wow. Well, I thought you were going to show some demos today. Wow, that was a lot of demos. That's awesome. This is really cool. So, wow. I don't see any other like kind of wrap up questions here. For people to get involved, there's obviously the MVC repo, and then the home repos, right?
There's people ask questions. Repo also.
But I'm sorry. What?
There's also the Blazor repo, ASP.NET
Blazor repo. Yes, of course. Yeah, for that. Wow, this is great. Thank you again as the whole MVC team. This is fun. I personally, as I am going out and doing presentations and talking about MVC and talking about, you know, just building applications with ASP.NET Core, I always flip over to the code and show your commits as they're going in. And it's really cool to just, you know, I think this is neat probably for people that have been using MVC for years to, you know, be meeting and asking questions with the team and stuff. So this is great.
Well, thank you for using MVC today. We appreciate your support, and we do our best to try and make the experience as productive and useful as possible.
It's a lot of people in the room, and then on the point also from the other side of how many people are using MVC and how many features you crank out. This is an amazing thing. How much you folks get done. So. Hooray, big group hugs. And now, are you ready for the dramatic zoom out?
How do we do that? I don't know how to do the dramatic zoom out. What are we supposed to do?
Do we all like push back at the same time?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if I know how to stop the stream either, so that's going to be fun. Here.
Do I just push the button?
She said to push it.
I'm pushing the button. I'm doing it. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye. Bye.